all three of them are committed to begin bringing the troops home.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! One day out of five last week is entirely unacceptable, at least by my own standards, so, I'm going to see if we can't pull off five straight days of radio here. How's that? Okay. Sorry about last week. The first 3 days were okay. I mean, you know, it was necessary, and it was time very, very well spent. However, I'm sorry about Friday, but I was at a point where I couldn't move my dadgum neck. And somehow, you don't really think about it being necessary unless you're Flush Flimball making fun of Michael J. Fox or something. But yeah, being able to move your neck does come in handy in this business once in a while. It really, really does. And I couldn't. And that made it kind of difficult. And to be fair, it was also my daughter's birthday. So we kind of spent the evening together as a family. Her sisters, her brother, the grandbaby, Agnes, me, and the demon that lives in my neck. And is still in residence there, although the consistent use of ibuprofen, popping them like, I don't know, green M&Ms, is making it somewhat tolerable. So, again, my apologies for Friday, but I'll try to make it up to you this week. And with any luck at all, like I said, we'll get through five whole blessed, wonderful days. Suits? Suits. Good deal. Okay, so it's about 3 minutes past the hour. We are embarked upon a new week of Head On. And let's see, just to let you know what's coming up this week, at least one guest scheduled for Wednesday. And I'm looking forward to it, and I bet you John Fox will be interested when he hears this. We're going to have Chris Flavin, the president of the World Watch Institute. They've just released their State of the World report for 2008. And, of course, the World Watch Institute is very, very much interested in issues of energy and sustainability. I'm looking forward to what he has to say, having, well, he was the featured speaker Tuesday night up in Massachusetts, and he's a brilliant man, and he's absolutely plugged into the idea of a sustainable world. So I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to hear some fascinating stuff come Wednesday, and so that'll make it an especially enjoyable prayer meeting edition of Head On. This evening, however, I want to start by doing something that may be marginally difficult. Difficult because it is audio of a video, and difficult because of the subject matter. You know, we talk a lot about the industrial food grid on this program. And it turns out, and you may remember a couple of months back when we talked about the fact that E. coli contaminated food is being fed to our children. Well, now it's been captured on tape. This is a report from the Humane Society of the United States and their factory farming campaign. It is a very graphic video. I recommend, if you've got the stomach for it, that you go and watch it. You'll see images, for instance, of a man operating a forklift, driving the forks under a sick, humongous dairy cow and shoving it along. Bulldozers doing the same. But it's the content, it's the audio content that I think you need to hear. Because, again, if I have any success at all in bringing these issues to the fore, I hope that that success is measured in terms of showing, or, well, this is radio, letting you hear these things and bring these attention issues to your attention, not as diseases in and of themselves, but as symptoms of a disease. My lovely wife, being as activist oriented as she possibly can be, fires off the occasional letter to our various and sundry elected representatives. She wrote to Senator Jay Rockefeller recently about food safety issues, and she got back a very nice form letter talking about what Jay is in fact doing in the Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation, where he's a member, where they approved S-2045, the Consumer Product Safety Commission Reform Act of 2007. The only reason it needs reformed, however, it bears mentioning, is because George W. Bush, in conjunction with a godless, soulless, dueless, give-not-a-tinker's-damn-about-the-American-people repiglick in Congress during the long, miserable years when they held power, not to suggest that the Democrats in power have done a hell of a lot more, but, you know, they're not as bad as what the repiglickins were. The only reason the CPSC needs reforming is because it was broken. And he goes on to tell Agnes that his colleague, Senator Richard Durbin of Illinois, has introduced S-654, the Safe Food Act of 2007, which seeks to address food safety issues by consolidating the food safety system under a new Food Safety Administration. And there's some good ideas inside it, requiring the United States to certify any foreign government that wanted to ship food into the United States, as well as some legislation dealing with pet food safety issues, and a revamp again of the broken FDA. All of these, brought to you by the Republican Party, whose sole goal is to break government so that they can then claim that government doesn't work. Katrina? Anybody? The aftermath of 9/11, the workers working in the toxic filth, in the debris pile, and the human misery pile? But the Safe Food Act of 2007 and the Food Safety Administration, geez, just get back to the business of governing and fund the FDA, and maybe, I don't know, maybe we don't need an entirely new department. But I guess I'm just cranky. But it was interesting that I saw this video and Agnes received this letter on the same day, because they did sort of dovetail. Now what you're going to hear is a pathetic beef cow, or a dairy cow, past its production, having been pumped up with hormones and steroids all of its life, things like bovine growth hormone, which is used to make them give milk in manners that nature did not intend. Or what's the Declaration of Independence say? Oh, yeah. Nature and nature's God. And yet, oddly enough, you never see any of these dead from the neck up right-wing religion industry freakazoids being concerned. Oh, we can't teach evolution. Yeah, but by God, you'll sit idly by while the dairy industry pumps up cattle with artificial milk production hormones, won't you there, Reverend? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let's take a run at this and see if we can make any sense of it.
An investigation by the Humane Society of the United States uncovers abuse of down dairy cows, cows too sick or too injured to stand, at a California slaughterhouse. What's more, the meat is being served to children through the National School Lunch Program.
Oh, charming. And that thud you heard was a cow getting poked in the eye because it wouldn't get up. Because it's been tormented for its entire existence. And its legs just don't work anymore. The beep, beep, beep that you heard earlier was a forklift that was using its fork to shove a downed cow, still alive, barely, rolling it over and over and over because the lazy thing wouldn't get up and walk. I made a joke, Thursday evening, suggesting that the free-range chickens that we had for dinner while I was away had probably had counseling before they were slaughtered. Har, har, har. You know what? If they did, good for the people who did it. Because, you know, this is tough for me. I'm a meat eater. I like pulled pork, barbecued chicken, sautéed chicken breast with maybe lemon and olive oil, a little fresh rosemary and some artichoke hearts. Call me anything you want. Just don't call me late for dinner. And these sons of bitches are doing as much as they possibly can to turn me into a vegetarian. Probably just wither away. God.
These animals are so terribly abused. You know, when they're dragged or pushed with a bulldozer or a forklift, that's just inhumane handling. It's gross mistreatment. It violates the law. And these animals are going into the school lunch program. They're going onto the plates of children.
The Hallmark Slaughterhouse supplies the Westland Meat Company, which processes the meat from the cows. Westland is a top supplier of ground beef to the school lunch program, and it proudly displays its award as the Supplier of the Year during 2004 and 5.
Boy, if they're the Supplier of the Year, wouldn't you hate to see the outfit that came in last? The school lunch program. Reckon how many Congress people actually know about this stuff. I'm guessing less than 10% of the members of Congress. Probably fully 50% of the members of Congress are in the pay of some lobby that's hired by this outfit. But that's because I'm a cynic, right?
1 million pounds of meat from Westland were shipped to California, Texas, and 34 other states last year.
Oh, let's see, 34 other states, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Florida, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Idaho, Oregon, Washington, California, Texas. Looks like probably Massachusetts. No, Maine. Maine. Vermont. New York. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Downer cattle. Now the interesting thing about this is that if you ask the busted, broken, frauded up, dummied up, ginned up, rubed up FDA, they'll tell you that downer cattle are not allowed in the food supply. Never mind the fact that this is all documented on video.
Taxpayers footed nearly $40 million in contracts for Westland to provide meat to needy families and the elderly, as well as to school children.
You can see all this.
Why don't we just start feeding the poor and the elderly, you know, dead people, and get it over with? Straight to Soylent Green and stop the debate. What was that article I read the other day? The rich get organics and the poor get diabetes? Yeah.
You were encrusting along the hide.
Public health expert Dr. Michael Greger points out the hazards of slaughtering down cattle.
At slaughter, when they're cutting through this hide, can introduce these fecal pathogens, Salmonella, E. coli, into the meat. Kind of playing, you know, Russian roulette. When even one of these animals gets in the food supply, it can get into the meat of a number of hamburgers.
The USDA says down
again with the forklift.
Cows are unfit for people to eat, but workers at the slaughterhouse will do anything to get these animals into the food supply.
The meat industry tries.
That's a cow. That sound you heard was a cow that's laying on the ground, unable to move, being hosed down.
Squeeze as many profits out of these animals as possible.
Oh, the magic word, profit!
Animals too sick or injured to walk are animals they want to turn a profit on.
By allowing downed cattle into the food supply, we're increasing the risk of human exposure to mad cow disease, Salmonella, E. coli, and other food poisoning bacteria.
Now, let's stop for a minute. Obviously, they couldn't put this in the meat case at your grocery store. They can, however, grind it up and freeze it and send it to your kid's school as hamburger. Or maybe it comes in big 1-gallon cans of zesty chili. Or maybe it's cans of vegetable beef soup. Hearty soup sticks to your ribs. Good and good for you. Healthy food. Soup is good food. Any can that has beef in it, by virtue of it having been cooked to certain temperatures at certain pressures, that is sold in America, is likely to have in it beef that has been contaminated with, as the food scientist says so properly, fecal material. You know the more base word for that. Any. Corned beef hash? Vegetable beef soup? Beef stew? Anything that has meat in it. Oh, hot dog chili. We went through the Great American Hot Dog Chili Scare of summer 2007 this past year, didn't we? Or maybe it was fall. How did it get this way? Well, it got this way as a result of people who say, you know, government regulation is not good for the economy. The free market does best when it regulates itself, because it will not do anything that is harmful to its ability to make a profit. Right. Like what? Oh, like following food safety standards until it gets caught. Mother.
Investigation has brought a terrible problem to light. Illegal conduct at slaughterhouses, downer livestock being abused. It's just irresponsible and reckless for the USDA to allow this process to occur.
Gee, I just realized it's before dinner time in certain parts of the country, and I'm sorry. Now, I'm not, you know, this was the U.S. Humane Society, and I'm certainly not going to go out. I'm not one of these PETA freaks. I'm not going to go throw paint on somebody's fur coat or leather jacket. But I'm also not going to cue up Elton John singing The Circle of Life right now, because this is not that. This is the circle of profit. I reiterate to you that this country would not have E. coli scares if we still had local small-town butchers who were meticulously and scrupulously sanitary in their practices, because anybody who got sick eating meat, everybody would know it was him, you know, and he'd be out of business, and you know, the kids are hungry and, you know, crying at night, and no. Just like your local baker doesn't need, FDA regulation. I mean, you want to talk about somebody who doesn't need to be regulated? The local guy who has the possibility of facing the pitchforks and torches crowd if they get people sick, that guy doesn't need as much regulation. The local baker does not need FDA regulations that suggest that any given loaf of bread may contain 400 parts per million of rat droppings. You only need those kind of regulations when you are building a Soviet-style, centralized command economy that is hybridized within a capital-intensive profit system. That's when you need that. You know, this has been going on for a while. Go back and read, if you want to giggle. And God knows, after an issue like this, you need one. Go back and read Mark Twain's The Facts of the Great Beef Contract. Go back and read a little bit about the profiteering that took place as far back as the Civil War. And yet, it's quite interesting, because it turns out that the USDA is spinning for all it's worth. Martha Rosenberg, writing at commondreams.org, writes, you wouldn't think that you could spin a video that shows slaughterhouse workers electric shocking downer cows, waterboarding them, jabbing their eyes with herding paddles, and ramming them with forklift blades while they squeal in pain. But the USDA is trying. Bad enough the slaughterhouse, Hallmark Meatpacking Company in Chino, California. Hello, John Fox. Didn't you hang out in Chino for a while? Not that you had anything to do with Hallmark Meatpacking, but, you know, I just figured it'd be a point of reference. Oh, why do I do these things? Supplies the National School Lunch Program. Oh, God! A certain portion of children have already eaten the meat that is available in the video. If you want to see the video, it's at www.hsus.org. Bad enough U.S. downer cattle are, according to Cattle Network, quote, being forced to their feet in order to pass inspection and be processed in violation of mad cow regulations. USDA inspectors were on site at the plant while the video was made. Don't say a word there, Joe Bob, or you'll be out of that sweet government job you've been protecting for so long. Bad enough Jack in the Box and In-N-Out have pulled beef from the Chino slaughterhouse. Less than 2 years after diners in 11 restaurants in 9 California counties ate meat from the first U.S. mad cow, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, newly appointed U.S. Agriculture Secretary Mike Johanns of Nebraska, who left last year, vowed to reverse the ban on downer cattle. I supported Ann Veneman when she announced just to assure the public, that we were aggressively on top of the issue, said Johanns. But gosh, the testing that's been done shows the risks are low and our animals have done well. Really brings a sort of sliding scale approach to the idea of done well. Or, for that matter, well done. Meat executives tried to claim that the animals suffered injury after passing inspection, which would make slaughter legal, but investigators found no records of injuries after arrival for 20 of the downers that ended up on U.S. dinner plates. Says the USDA, Martha Rosenberg asks, how can USDA spin a video that's convinced 150 school districts from New York City to Los Angeles to quarantine their meat? Called Something Out of Dante's Inferno by Gene Evans, Oregon School System. She writes, there's no evidence that any of the animals, particularly downers in particular, did in fact enter the food supply, according to Dr. Kenneth Peterson, Assistant Administrator, Office of Field Operations for the USDA's Food Safety Inspection Service. He said that this past Thursday. Now, perhaps they moved them in an unacceptable manner. That's the part where they ram them with the forks of the forklifts. But the fact remains, they go into the food supply? Maybe the facility was moving them back out of the slaughter chain. Maybe they were being taken to surgery to have wings applied so they could just flap since they couldn't walk. The USDA says that the video represents only allegations, and that the USDA has its own investigation. Bill Thompson of Dow Jones Newswire responded to that statement. These are only allegations. He asked Dr. Peterson, I mean, do you actually expect to go down there and ask them if they were doing anything illegal and people to say, well, yeah, we were. Oopsie, caught us. But the FDA says, well, hell, nobody's got sick yet. What are you worried about? Nobody's told these doofuses about how long it takes for the little prions to really rot your brain real good and for mad cow to set in, have they? Dr. Peterson says that restaurants who got the meat from the downer cattle won't be notified. I have a lot of information from this plant, both on the obviously the inspectional side. Inspectional? This is a word now? Inspectional side, but also plant records that all point to a singular conclusion that the product coming out of the plant not only meets regulatory requirements, but is safe and wholesome. All right, fine, Doc. Here's a plate of downer cattle tartare. Get after it. Oh, mustard. Safe and wholesome. So I guess that's where we get started this evening. It's about 27 minutes past the hour. And look, I could have gone any number of ways, but let's get this one out of the way. I mean, it's tough. I had a conversation over the weekend, because we live in the country. A fella came along, wanted to know, would I be interested in buying some farm fresh eggs? I asked him about what his practices were. Asked him if he'd care and if I came and saw the birds. He said, heck no. So, yeah, farm fresh eggs as opposed to the ones that sit in too warm temperatures in the egg warehouses where, the salmonella can grow and multiply inside of them. Yeah, I could get into that. Turns out he's wanting to raise chickens, and, you know, if he can sell the eggs, it's gravy to him. He needs the chickens because he's trying to farm without the industrial fertilizers. He hopes to get the nitrates into the soil by virtue of chicken leavings. And to that I say, congratulations, good idea. He said, I just can't afford fertilizer, because he raises 60, 75 head of cattle, slaughters his own beef, doesn't involve any forklifts. But he said, I can't pay $500 for a bag of fertilizer to put on my hay fields. I can't pay that.
Besides, I reckon the chickens would do it just as well or better. Good on him. Gonna have to talk to him about seeing if we can get, because because I like to cook and we talk about food and stuff like that, and we know I'm a foodie. God knows that's what it says when I step on the scale. But I've gotten to the point where it used to be that I'd walk through the meat case and go, oh, that's a lovely cut. Not anymore. I walk along the meat aisle, and I see the pork, and I think about the poor souls working at Smithfield's Tar Heel, North Carolina kill plant, where the assembly line moves 32,000 slaughter hogs through that place a day. And in fact, Smithfield has recently been allowed by a United States federal judge, a crooked United States federal judge. Smithfield has been allowed to maintain its lawsuit against the United Food and Commercial Workers who are trying to organize that plant. You may remember that story. Smithfield Meats has alleged that the United Food and Commercial Workers, by virtue of trying to stand up for the working people who are treated almost as poorly as the hogs themselves, that the UFCW has been engaged in racketeering-influenced corrupt activities under the RICO, Racketeer-Influenced Corrupt Organizations Act. And a crooked federal judge in Richmond, Virginia, has said, well, sure, sue the union. Used to work before, might work again. Might be the very thing those people need down there in Tar Heel, North Carolina. Need to understand that they have an individual contractual relationship with the company. They don't have a collective bargaining agreement, so they need to just make the best deal that they can, shut the hell up and kill them some hogs, 32,000 of them a day. So that's what I see when I walk by the pork side of the meat case. I walk past the chicken side, and I think about all the nitrates and poisons running into the Potomac River up in the panhandle of West Virginia. Then the beef case, well, now I've got a metaphor and an image for that, don't I? Sure I do. I've got the image of some pathetic former dairy cow being shoved along with a forklift and basically water tortured, just like what we do at Guantanamo. High pressure hose hitting that cow right in the face. You know, I know for a fact that this place where we live, once upon a time, they raised a beef or two every year. And I'm guessing that those beeves were not treated with any of the cruelty that I witnessed on that video. Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner has told me that, you know, he being a Texan, I think it's required under Texas state law that you raise a cow or two once in a while. That he does. And I can guarantee you that none of the cattle that Rick Goodner raises are treated the way that those cattle at that factory merciless, god-awful hellhole something from Dante's Inferno are treated. But no. No. And again, this isn't a function of you. This isn't your fault. This isn't my fault. This is the fault of an economy that prizes the ability to push out of the way small-scale, localized people who mean something to their community in favor of what? Well, in favor of 3 cents on per share on the quarterly profit and loss sheet. 3 cents a share doesn't matter to somebody who owns 100 shares, you know, a small timer, but 3 cents a share can mean millions to our betters. Ultimately, it comes down to being a little bit along the lines of a recognition of how thoroughly you, I, and the rest of the people who carry this nation on their backs day in and day out are used. I guarantee you that nobody in that video was a member of a union. Why? Because generally on job sites, union people are more likely to turn in regulatory violations because they affect their own safety. Those people, on the other hand, oh, hell, Bill, just run the forklift up and pick up the damn cow because it can't walk, and just roll it over a few times till we get it over there to the sling. Inspector's supposed to be here today. This ain't no time to be having no qualms. Just stick the damn cow with the forklift, and if you don't want to do it, you're fired. You understand me? You're fired. I don't care if you've been here 20 years. You're fired. That's how that works. And it works the same way in Tar Heel, North Carolina, where the people don't have, as yet, collective bargaining. And it applies everywhere that the man who writing the paycheck has greater power than the man who, or woman, who is making their business go. I'm sorry, I was just... I was taken aback by that because it's the combination of what's happening in the factory versus the reality of knowing where that cruelty leads. Now, that miserable meat doesn't wind up on the plates of a Rockefeller or a Buffett or a Lou Dobbs. No. It winds up in front of school children. The weakest among us, some of whom, the only decent meal that they get in a day, and you know that happens in more instances in the United States than you or I would care to try to estimate or have a very long discussion about. Can you imagine trying to set some of that beef down in front of Lou Dobbs? I somehow don't think he'd be up for his steak tartare that night, Lou Dobbs. No, you take one of those abused cattle from that video, and you try to serve it up to our betters, and they'd say, what are you, crazy? I'm not eating this. Nobody in their right mind would eat this. Well, sir, we're feeding it to the children. Are they poor children? Yeah, okay. Consider themselves lucky to be having meat. And there's another link in this process, of course, because the school lunch program is federally funded, and the right-wing Repiglicans like to talk about how that's welfare, and the government's got no business making sure that children get a decent meal. And you know what? It turns out the Repiglicans were right, because they did, in fact, make sure that school children in America don't get a decent meal, that they eat vile, sick, diseased meat instead. Can't turn your back on them. Well, you know, we turned back the Republican assault on the school lunch program. No, you didn't, you poor little suckers. You got had. Because the Bush administration, the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, USDA, is right there to make sure that the little children get the worst possible product we can put before them at the greatest maximum profit that can be generated for the degenerate corporates who run the factory Cowschwitzes.
Yeah, I know. I know. So that's a starting place. But don't worry, we're not just cruel and vicious to the cattle or to the school children. No. As Paul Krugman noted in his column today entitled Hate Springs Eternal, America made a turn for the worse in the late 50s and early 60s. The lead paragraph of the column says, in 1956, Adlai Stevenson, running against Dwight Eisenhower, tried to make the political style of his opponent's vice president, a man by the name of Richard Nixon, an issue. The nation, Stevenson warned, was in danger of becoming, quote, a land of slander and scare, the land of sly innuendo, the poison pen, the anonymous phone call, and hustling, pushing, shoving, the land of smash and grab and anything to win. Said Adlai Stevenson, this is Nixon land. And apparently there's a book coming out soon by Rick Perlstein. And he argues that, in fact, that is precisely where America went and what America became, Nixon land. And so it should come as no surprise, no surprise at all, that according to the International Herald Tribune, military prosecutors have decided to seek the death penalty for six Guantanamo detainees who are to be charged with central roles in the September 11th terror attacks. They said the charges, and I didn't catch up as I was reviewing for the program this evening. I didn't catch whether it had actually happened, but as of the writing of this story, the officials said the charges would be announced at the Pentagon as soon as today, and we're likely to include numerous war crimes charges against the six men, including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. That's the guy that we waterboarded. Now, bear in mind, these men have never had and will never have a fair trial. I know. It's just seems so silly to have trials for people that we already know are guilty, right? But then again, you can make the argument that if we already know they're guilty, the trial won't be much trouble. You know, a real trial, not one of these sham mock kangaroo court, you know, and that's really kind of offensive to the kangaroos. My apologies, Skippy. But this banana republic tin pot dictator court that George Bush has ordered be put in place, you know, where the defendant has no ability to defend himself, where he is defended by a member of the military whose very career can hinge on how poorly he does his job, because if he does it well, as we've seen, he'll be passed over for promotion. Where judge, jury, and executioner are all embodied in one arm of the government, namely the military. Where there is no appeal, where no court of competent jurisdiction can hear any question as to the innocence or guilt of the accused. Where the accused has not even so much as the right that is guaranteed, by the way, in the Constitution, to be indicted by a grand jury. And again, I put the question to you, if they are that obviously guilty, and knowing full well the old aphorism that a good prosecutor can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich, Why is it too much trouble to give these monsters, for we are told they are monsters, and they may very well be, or they may just be an errant sheep herder who was sold by his neighbor for $5,000 to the United States military, because we know that that happened in Afghanistan too. Why is it too much trouble to put on an honest-to-God criminal trial with criminal charges, indictments, discovery, and everything else?
Well, they violate national security, they might...
No, what it boils down to is they don't want that little bastard getting up on the stand and talking about, you know, when the battery cables got hooked up to his balls. You see. Nope. We're just going to give him a nice fair trial and take him out and shoot him. Or gas him. Or electrocute him. Or cut their heads off. God only knows what we'll do for an execution. Lethal injection, perhaps? On the 11th day of February, 2008, this is the America that we inhabit. An America in which, if you are criminally charged with being a terst, you don't have any, be you American or foreigner, any constitutional rights whatsoever. Where the charge is, in fact, the conviction. Where the execution is the proof of the rightness of the charge. Where habeas corpus is... Oh, what did they say? What did Alberto Gonzalez or one of those other monstrous war criminals in the Bush White House say about the Geneva Convention? Yeah. Where habeas corpus is quaint. That's our America. That's the America that the Democratic Congress has no interest in correcting. One wonders how many goat herds we will actually execute before someone besides, you know, us gives a damn. I don't know. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got? Hello? All right. Hi, who have I got?
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Why don't you call a spade and call these courts what they actually are, star chambers?
I was getting to that. I didn't know if the reference would work or not. But the Court of Star Chamber is precisely what they are.
And given Bush's maniacal religious bent, you could even go so far as to say it's a star chamber as an arm of the Inquisition.
Inquisition, sure. Now, dig it. One of the guys that they're going to off, Susan, is the so-called 20th hijacker. This guy was denied entry to the United States in the month before September 11th. He didn't get on the plane. He didn't wave the plane bye-bye from the airport. He didn't holler Allah Akbar as it took off into the sky. Nothing.
In other words, they're going to kill him for a thought crime.
You could say that.
Yeah. Anybody want to move to Canada with me? Anybody in Canada?
No, by God, I want to stay here and fight.
This gets scary.
You know, I do. I want this changed. I read this and I just ache, Susan.
And this is, you know, the United States and its allies took real live monsters and gave them scrupulously fair trials.
Yes.
and acted on the results of those trials.
Scrupulously fair trials that even included the presumption of their innocence.
Exactly. And there were some innocent verdicts handed down.
Yeah. Well, not guilty.
Yeah. And what these trials are going to be like? These are going to be like the Nazi trials of the Jews all over Germany in the
or the Nazi trial of the 30s. The Nazi trials of Sophie Scholl and the rest of the White Rose Society.
Yes.
Show trials, fake trials.
Yes.
You're going to love this. Apparently, under the rules that apply to this tin pot trial system, on a whim, the military prosecutors on whose careers ride on this, on a whim, they can designate charges as capital when they present them.
And they've already designated them as capital.
But the worst, it's even worse. Defense counsel, for what it's worth, and his client can walk into the show trial not knowing what the punishment is and have the prosecutor stand up and say, yeah, we're going to kill him too. And that's the first they know.
Oh, cute. In other words, they get to change horses in midstream.
Yeah, you tell him to get up there and confess on the stand under oath, and maybe we'll not kill him.
George, you are a traitor. You are a savage. You are a dictator. And you are a monster, and you need to be in front of those military tribunals.
But what does this say? We know all that, and we know that it applies to Cheney, and we know that it applies to Rumsfeld and this Gates character, and it applies to Condoleezza Rice and Richard Pearl and Wolfowitz and the whole filthy crowd. We know all that. Stephen Hadley. We know it applies to that. But, you know, there's a larger question to be asked here. What of the true motherless sons of bitches who will carry out these trials? And by that I mean the officers who sit in judgment, the officers who conduct the trial. What of them?
I quote to you, well, I paraphrase the war crimes laws. And there is no statute of limitations. If you partake in it, if you support it, if you even consent to it, you are guilty. And if even one person dies, you will hang right along with the people who actually took part in it. That means those judges, those prosecutors, prepare for the war crimes trials, because there is no statute of limitations. And sooner or later, someone will get you. Remember?
No, nobody's going to get them, Susan. They're not going to be punished. This is probably the only publicly available commentary in which anyone would dare suggest that the, you know, noble and honorable officers and gentlemen on the court panel are anything other than upstanding a few good men. They're criminals.
Of course.
They're the worst kind of criminals. But nobody else has the guts to say that.
Well, there are countries on this planet who will arrest them the minute they get into their borders. Just remember Elie Wiesel and...
No, they're not. No, that's not true, Susan. Please understand, it's not true. There's no place on earth that would arrest the prosecutor who conducted the mock trial that led to a 9/11 conspirator's execution. There's not a country on earth that would. Not one. Okay, they're gonna get away with it. And bear in mind, I don't apply this same standard to, say, a federal prosecutor in a federal court or a federal judge, because those people are trained and empowered to conduct constitutional criminal inquiries, criminal trials, according to the federal rules of evidence and according to constitutional principles. We have, I don't agree with it, but we have a federal capital punishment statute. It was used on Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah.
And if...
It's so far outside of the Constitution, it's... Oh, God, it's
yeah, the light... right. So, the fact of the matter is, if we were to try these people in the federal judiciary, affording them the same rights that any other human being on earth would be afforded,
they could walk. If
we executed them, we would at least be able to say that we did it according to fairly standardized and civilized rules of conduct and procedure, and that they had, in fact, had both procedural and substantive due process, and that they had been afforded equal protection under the law. And that's the most important thing here, Susan, under the law. These are outlaw trials, and the people conducting them from the top down are outlaws themselves. And in conducting them, we're...
outlaw nation.
You're absolutely right. We make ourselves an outlaw nation.
And I am so ashamed of this nation. I feel like apologizing to the entire planet.
I don't know if it would be accepted.
I don't really know if it would either.
Let's see. The others to be charged are Mohammed al-Qahtani, the 20th hijacker, Ramzi bin al-Shib, said to have been the main intermediary between the hijackers and the leaders of al-Qaeda, Ali Abdulaziz Ali, known as Ammar al-Baluchi, a nephew of Mohammed, who was said to have been Mohammed's lieutenant for the 2001 operation, whatever that means, al-Baluchi's assistant, Mustafa Ahmed al-Hawasawi, and they don't say what he did, and Walid bin Attash, a detainee known as Khalad, who investigators say selected and trained some of the hijackers. Fair enough. If they are all that guilty...
try them in federal court.
Yeah.
But let's face it, if you put them in federal court, a lot of the cases would get thrown out because of the torture. Through to the poison tree.
Anything that they said would certainly be thrown out. It doesn't necessarily mean that the prosecution would. They simply couldn't use the confessions.
Yeah, and what else do they have?
Well, that's the problem now, isn't it? That's why we can't... Bush administration's in a corner on this one.
Yeah,
They screwed up the prosecutions. They screwed up the cases because, after all, being something associated with George W. Bush, it was bound to be screwed up.
Yeah, it's gone into complete foobar, and, George, you are a mess.
Never mind him. You expect snakes to bite, but it's what he's doing to what little shell was left of any sense of decency that this country had. That just makes my guts grind.
Well, it's making me nauseous. God.
The wife of one of the pilots whose plane was hijacked says, "My opinion is, if the death of 3,000 people isn't sufficient for death penalty in this country, then why do we even have the death penalty?"
Oh, you stupid woman.
Thank you. You just saved me from catching hell.
Lady, grow up. It's not going to bring your husband back.
Not only that, nobody's saying that we can't have the death penalty.
Yeah. Try him in federal court. You find him guilty by the established rules of law, fine. Do your thing.
Dear God. Well, Susan, thank you very much. I know. I'll try to make it better. I've already ruined your supper, so, you know.
Well, it was already ruined when I saw this thing about the 9/11 charges. I mean, it was just,
I know. Have as good an evening as you possibly can, Susan.
Yeah, I'm going to go throw something or kill some monsters or something. I don't know.
One of these days, we're going to have those rubber bricks made, and you'll be the first one to get one.
Oh, thank you. I do appreciate it. I love tag.
All right. Bye-bye. Moving on. Hi, who have I got?
Bob.
Oh, hey, Ed.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Doing all right. I got in there a little earlier and then got a beep and had to hang up.
Oh, okay.
But I just wondered if you'd heard about how they were doing that Republican election, I think, out in Washington.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of funny to hear them crying foul, isn't it?
Yeah. What comes around goes around. Is that what they say, or what goes around comes around?
Yeah, one way or the other. It's about the same, six of one and a half dozen of another.
Yeah. But how's everything else going with you guys?
Oh, everything's going pretty well. I'm glad to be back in the saddle on a Monday night after having missed so much of last week. You know, kind of refreshing to be back at it.
I just called one time last week, and I got the station all right.
Well, I was out of town for three days and. Down in the back, so to speak, for one. So it made for a tough week.
Yeah, I got you one night. I don't even remember what night it was.
Well, the only night I was on last week was Thursday.
Yeah, but what else is new? What else is going on? What's all the hay raising about?
Oh, I don't. I've just started out with this business of sham trials to execute the so-called bad guys of 9/11 and the. Rotten, disgusting way that we provide meat to the school lunch systems. You know, it's just sort of two seemingly disparate things that somehow or another wind up making a lot of sense together as far as I'm concerned. A couple of cases of massive screw-ups by the Bush administration, but what's new, huh?
Yeah, well, I caught the part where that lady was talking about the other woman that was hooraying Massey on, and looks like that. Well, they've got to know that the massive fines and so forth that's been levied against him, that coal operation that he's got going, is nothing but a death trap, tax escape, and among other filthy things that's involved in that. And with Blankenship, I guess he still works for him. It's a pitiful operation.
Which one in particular there, Ed?
The one they talk about that got the fines. I forget how many.
That was multiple fines.
Multiple fines, but you know something? I don't know which operation got it.
Well, it was a bunch of operations. It was Eric Coma, and I think that's the man. There were 4,500 citations.
My gosh, I didn't know, you know, they just said massive on the...
But the thing is, the real truth isn't being told about that story, Ed, because there were 4,500 citations, and they entered into a consent decree for $20 million in fines, all right? Well, if Massey entered into a consent decree for $20 million, you got to figure that they were actually on the hook for something maybe more than $100 million.
Yeah.
So this constitutes a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, and you know, to hear them tell it, Massey is broke. You know, I mean, that's what's been put on this 62-100 station, that Massey wasn't making any money.
Oh no, that's why they give Don Blankenship a raise every year.
Yeah, well, and that scumboat alone is a forerunner of what Massey is.
Yeah.
So, but what's this governor's race look like to you?
Oh, Manchin's most likely a juggernaut.
Yeah, he'll I think he's probably got it in the bag. Not by my vote, but he's going to be hard to beat. The machine is the big machine's going his way.
Well, it's on greased rails.
Yeah. So.
Because oddly enough, he still enjoys, or so we're told, one of the highest approval ratings of any governor in the country.
Yeah. And he's really one of the sorriest, according to the exposures Mel Kastler's given him.
There's a lot of... Well, look, I mean... the work... Yeah, I know Mel's upset about the workers' comp thing, and he rightfully so. That's, you know, that's just a dodge. We used to have, for those who don't live around here, we used to have state-operated, state-run, state-funded, state-funded insofar as they managed it, workers' compensation that everybody paid into. And one of the things that Joe Manchin did was to scream that, oh, we have to privatize it. And they did. And now, you know, I talk to people who run small businesses, and their workers' compensation rates, you know, who haven't even had any claims against comp, you know, for eons, their comp premiums have gone through the roof. And of course, it's gone through the roof because they have to pay for TV ads and a fancy building, and lots of PR, and they have to pay high private sector executive salaries.
Well, we got one of the delegates from over here has a business, and he's raising all kind of cane on it himself, the way it's affected him. But the let me tell you, until a couple of Republican governors, namely one is Arch Moore, forgave a bunch of his buddies their behind or overdue payments and just said, that's all right, let it go, workman's comp operated all right. Now, I know what I'm talking about. I dealt with it for years while I was in the union, and they made ends meet. It never did get to the point to where it was before they privatized. And I despise the word privatize anyway. That means it's not good for the working class. And everything I've seen privatized is. And I don't know about you. Maybe you know something that turned out good about some of it. But I know that the golf course right over there, I play at that golf course in Beckley.
Mm-hmm.
They were $164,000 in the rears for I don't know how long. And finally, a couple of us kept getting on the air and talking about it, and they paid that. I'm not saying that was the sole reason they paid it, but I guess they got tired of having their name mentioned. And probably the Chamber of Commerce got in and said they ought to pay it. Don't give businesses a bad rep. So I know that that business itself, with them and the politicians, is the one that brought this and let this thing come to where it's at now.
Absolutely. And you know, once again, nobody asked people who were working what they thought of workers' comp.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a lot of people who complained about how long it took to get cases through the system, but the system largely worked in terms of getting the relief to the people who needed it.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, you know, when we negotiated contracts, the company was allowed to use workman's comp and unemployment as part of the wage or the economic package. But then every time that we had a case, we had to fight for it. It wasn't ours. It was like the company would argue both sides. You know, they'd fight you if you had to have it. But on the other hand, when it comes to negotiations, they paid for it for us. You know, I would have rather had them taken down my, and these people they got down there administering or overseeing the insurance and workman's comp. Well, what is now Brook Street, whatever.
Brick Street, yeah.
They're nothing but a bunch of company people. I mean, and, you know, they put up a $20 million building right off of the top. And the best of my understanding, that's with state money.
Oh, yeah.
So we're doing real good. And Bob, I'll tell you, in this election thing out there too, it just, the picture is certainly not pretty. You know, the whole thing, the, for the working class. Between China, the jobs that's being exported, the good paying jobs, and then the people keep supporting Walmart. And you know what? I don't, but no matter where you go to buy anything, it's got China brand on it anymore.
Just about.
I don't know of any place. We brought an alarm clock from somewhere the other day and brought it on. We thought sure that that was made in a drugstore, I believe. And we thought that that would be American made. Well, it went back to the store. It had China. Didn't have it on the box. It had it on the inside on the clock.
But you didn't find one that was American made, did you?
No. I haven't found one that's American made. So we got an old Big Bend, I think is the name of it here, that she wound too tight. So we're going to go get that thing fixed and use it since you can't find one that the Americans had their hand on. But I just thought I'd give a call and ask if you'd heard what they've done about that out in Washington on that, you know, just stopping the camp. And somebody said if McCain would just step out and say, finish the count, count all the votes, that wouldn't look too bad. But they're not going to do it. He's going to take that state but out of full count.
He can't afford not to.
Yeah, I know it. That guy's really going to put, and he's putting a push. But what about the Democratic part of it? Not that it makes a lot of difference.
You know, I got to say, Ed, that I'm all kinds of burned out on this process. I don't know about you, but I am.
Yeah, I am too.
I've been doing a lot of soul searching over the weekend after watching the ongoing pathetic conduct of the Obama and the Hillary supporters, and I'm just about at a point where I've decided that there's very little reason for me to vote in the primary at all.
Yeah.
The people, I'll vote for my party's nominee in November. Let's see. I'm not going to cast a vote for Jay Rockefeller. I'm not going to cast a vote for Nick Rahal. I don't have to vote against their opponent, but I'm not going to vote for them. And I got to thinking, with very few exceptions, there is nobody that I want to go out to the polls on primary day and vote for.
Yeah. Well, what?
My Fayette County delegation isn't worth the powder. And, well, no, I better not say that. They're not worth the gasoline that it takes to drive to the polls.
Agree.
Neither's my congressman. Neither's my senator.
And the ones coming on here in Fayette County is not fit to be in there. And this, I think the next sheriff is going to come out of one of the deputies. Three of them's thinking about running. And they say one of them's pretty good. But if they're...
Well, if they haven't filed, they're not running.
Well, I think they filed. I haven't looked at the files. But somebody told me that three of them was running. And one of them is out of the valley, Lopez, and then one of them's over around Dainese or somewhere. I think that's supposed to be the good one. But I'll keep you abreast on what's going on, because I got a good friend that keeps up with it closer than what I do in the county, and I'll tell you which is the best of the worst. But I don't have much use for cops, period, and especially that deputy force. They're either sleepers or chasers. So I just don't have much use.
I'm trying to find a reason why I should. Why I should vote in the primary?
Yeah.
I and you know, like I said, I'm going to do the right thing in November. I will vote for my party's nominee, whether it's Senator Clinton or Senator Obama. But I'm so just gut sick of the way they've behaved that I don't want to do it until then.
Yeah. Well, Edwards has met with, I think, Clinton today. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, he's meeting with Obama tomorrow. So I guess he's probably told Hillary that he's going to support Obama, or that he's supporting her, but he had to tell Obama first, one way or the other.
I think he's brokering something, Ed. He's trying to figure out which one
to get vice president.
Well, maybe not that, but seeing which one will meet the issues that were important to him with more commitment.
Yeah, well, his issue was poverty. I think his big issue was poverty.
His big issue was poverty. His big issue was also getting corporate money out of the process and out of Washington.
Right. Uh-huh. Well, and
of course, talking to either one of those two about getting corporate money out of the electoral process is like telling a thirsty man not to have a drink of water.
Right. But I guess we're just going to have to sit on the hot seat a while and see what happens. And you could shake all of them in there, all four of them. And the only thing, I got it against McCain because of the statement he made about might be in Iraq 100 years, you know, what an idiot.
Oh, that's just the starting place for me for McCain. I mean, for me, he's the McCain-Churian candidate. I don't think he's all home.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've often wondered just how much. And he gets, you know, they've made more out of that.
And I got a quote here that you might find interesting, and I'm taking it as gospel. In 1998, John McCain, and you know, he's got the mouth of a smartass.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, oh, he's a straight talker. No, he's mean, he's vindictive, and he's hateful. And in 1998, he asked, why is Chelsea, talking about Chelsea Clinton, you remember we had this big foo-frah over David Schuster saying that the Clintons were pimping her out, you know, what a crappy thing that was to say.
He said that?
No, that was David Schuster saying that, you know, since Chelsea was out campaigning for her mama, that the Clintons were pimping her out. Now, I haven't seen any major news outlets say that Obama was pimping out his daughters when they stood up on the stage with him. But, you know,
or his wife.
Or his wife or anything like that. No. But no, in 1998, John McCain asked, talking about Chelsea Clinton, why is Chelsea so ugly? Because her father is Janet Reno.
Jesus. You hear more stuff than I don't know where you get that at, but it's you get more information than the public. That's the reason I'm glad you got your program to expose stuff like that.
But McCain, you know, McCain was filthied up in the savings and loan debacle. We've all forgotten that by now. That was another one of those Bush administration, Reagan-era boondoggles that cost working people out the gazoo, bailing out all those savings and loans. And McCain was up to his eyebrows in it. And of course, you know, I don't buy into his war hero status either. I'm sorry he spent time as a prisoner of war, but you know, that doesn't qualify you to be president of the United States.
It means he was, as far as I'm concerned, he just got caught. That could have been me or any other veteran that got caught and put through that, and some of my best friends that come out of Vietnam. And that was well after I was in, had bamboo shoots run under their fingernails and was made to perform sexual acts with those men guards. And, you know, he went through no more than what anybody else, but these people haven't got the recognition or the medals and the honor that they tend to give that Republican.
John McCain wound up in a prisoner of war camp because John McCain got shot down on another one of those runs where he dropped bombs on mud huts full of poor people who, you know.
Right.
You know, how much of a hero do you have to be to slaughter somebody from 40,000 feet, Ed?
Yeah, that's sort of like hunting a rabbit with a 30-06, ain't it?
That or a grenade launcher.
Yeah. He ain't got much of a chance.
I knew an old boy who used to hunt turkey with a grenade launcher.
I knew one who hunted deer with a machine gun because I sold it to him.
So it hardly seems sporting, does it?
It don't, but they've ended his sports. He's in prison now. But you got people that can find the way to be outside of what is normally extreme. They can go beyond that. And that's beyond me. I can't imagine. He said, well, the reason he was hunting like that, because when them people heard that gun going off, that they was leaving the woods. So he had all the deer hunting for himself. So he had a good reason, I reckon. But anyway, Bob, I just wanted to call him. Say hi.
Well, good to hear from you, Ed. I trust you're doing all right.
Yeah, pretty good. And I want to listen in and see what's going on, see what the rest of the folks have got to say.
All right. Well, I'll put you back on hold, okay?
That's fine. And thank you for your time.
All right. You take care, Ed. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sure will.
Our good friend Ed here in Fayette County with us. Tell you what. I've been going at this for almost a solid hour and a half. I've earned a break, right? Okie doke. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll come back to your calls. You know the phone number, of course, 877-443-2366, or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Yeah, my name is Billy Shears.
This is Billy Shears. Join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Foxed Up with John Fox. Each week, I'll feature an artist and a song with a little commentary. We'll examine why music plays such an important role in our social and political climate. We'll try and make it fun, informative, and entertaining. Join us every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, with John Fox on Foxed Up. And for music with political commentary by great liberal minds, check out my website at unreportednews.net. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Well, obviously that was all wrong. Still got some cleaning out to do in the files. Billy Shears' music can be heard during All Foxed Up on Thursday evenings at midnight Eastern time. Now that one's going to go in the bin. Sorry about that, Billy. Billy Shears' Night Sounds comes your way Saturday nights at 9 p.m. and then rotates through the rest of the weekend with the Sourds Report and Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner. All square. I think John Fox will be with us at midnight tonight, as a matter of fact. Little update, though. There will not be a Strictly Confidential with the world's most fabulous, or a live one at least, there'll be a rerun, with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold. You know, Peter keeps all the computers here behaving themselves, but he's completely at the mercy of an internet service provider that's positively quixotic, and he's down. Or his internet is down for this evening, and all he can do is sit and swear. And from the sounds of things, he's been doing that at professional grade, because I think he's been out of internet since like Saturday. We're hooked on this, aren't we? Yes, we are. So, you know, that's what tonight is. But perhaps John and I can get together for a horn section at 11. And then All Foxed Up at midnight, and he confirms, yep, he's loaded for bear and ready to rock. All right, then, let's go to the phones and see who we've got and what's going on. Hi, welcome to the program.
Wow.
Hey, David, what's up?
That's synchronicity right there. Because as soon as I called, I don't know if anyone's ever done this before. As soon as I called, I hit the shh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean anything probably to a lot of people, but imagine the probability of doing that.
Yeah, that's...
It's not easy, but I make it look easy, okay?
Yeah, exactly. What's up?
Oh, a few things I wanted to say. One of the things, you're going to say... You're not going to get it at first, but then when I explain it, you're going to go, hot damn, that's evil genius. The first thing is, I was watching Patton Oswalt on the Henry Rollins show from season one. I rented the DVDs on Blockbuster, and he has this brilliant explanation about the Bush administration that explains everything to us in about 2 minutes. Why do people keep voting this guy in? Why do they keep stepping up the plate? And this is what he said. He said, sort of along the same lines of what Kevin was said, but then he had this brilliant insight. He said, willful, aggressive ignorance, but he said, it's kind of like Bush has a DUI, and he's standing around, and there's a bunch of bodies everywhere, and he's got the keys, and he's saying, I didn't do this. And then he goes on to say, now, to us, the critical thinkers, it goes, that we would think, holy crap, is this guy crazy or what? Let's get him out of here. Let's impeach him. Let's remove him. Let's do whatever. But to the Bushite, what happens is the light goes off, and this guy, they live vicariously through everything that he gets away with, they can't with at their job. So it's kind of like it's the psychologically and abused worker, kind of like an analogy, the guy with the swing line stapler. Everything that Bush gets away with is vicariously represented to the Bushite. And I thought, you know what, that does it for me right there.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that. And of course, you completely spoiled me with the reference to the swing line stapler Stephen Root character from Office Space.
Yeah.
You don't bring me back my stapler, I'll burn his place to the ground.
Yeah, I mean, but he goes on to say, he says that it's kind of like he goes we're obsessed with the horrific characters. It's like he said Vincent Price, when he started sawing bodies right in front of you, she was just watching you be like, I can't believe this guy is doing this. And I think that's what happened. I think a lot of people at their work, they're really abused type people. They're psychologically damaged. They're repressed. They're isolated. And what happens is they need something to channel off. So Bush is their man, I guess.
That's
which sucks
kind
for us. I mean,
that's kind of, that's scary and pathetic and creepy and rotten and all of those things. But it also has an air of truth to it, David.
And it makes you think about, wow, are people at work that mean to these people? Or something. Maybe they have jobs, and you know what it is? It's a lot of people who can't follow their dreams. I was reading something that was really interesting, and this might inspire you for Head On, but it was on this MySpace blog, and this guy was talking about how he was in the church and he would get criticized for every little thing that he did when he was a performer. Like, he was really really outlandish with clothes. They would say, Oh, you're going like that again. Well, you're going to be grounded 6 months. And then it would repress him back to what he was doing. He couldn't perform, and he said, and he goes, and it'll surprise you to find out that he said the CCM, which is the Contemporary Christian Music Awards, he said they were the most racist of all. And he gave an example. He said the Winans, which are a gospel family. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
I know who you are.
They couldn't sit in the front row, Bob. They couldn't sit with the CCM people. They had to sit in the upper balcony. And that was like, you know, a decade ago. But what he said was, even if you fail at what you want to do, he goes, if you do what you want to do, that's the success in itself, no matter how much it hurts. And I thought that was a really good insight into... A lot of people don't understand that's what it takes to follow dreams and everything. And even if you do keep falling down and keep failing, you shouldn't be discouraged by that, because that's just the path that people take. And you have to look at it this way: it's not paved. You're the one paving it for others, maybe.
Long time ago, I had somebody tell me that we do not learn from our successes.
That makes perfect sense to me.
We learn from our because I think there's a lot of truth in that.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think, another example is to put it on a pop culture term, Kanye West. When he was rapping, he was a producer, and he would go out of his way to rap in front of the people that he was working for. And he would show them these songs and these routines, and he'd get them hyped up. And the funny thing is, every single person was like, "Are you crazy? It's not going to work. You're wearing polo shirts and jeans. Who the hell is going to get into that?" Because he didn't want to wear the throwback jerseys. But see, what made Kanye a genius was every single time he fell, he got back up again, and he pitched it to the next person, and to the next person, and to the next person. And even, I don't know if you know about this, when he had a car accident and he busted his jaw completely open — now this should inspire people — and he couldn't talk, he had his mouth wired, he said, "You know what, I'm going to write a song, and then I'm going to record it, and I'm going to rap it." And he takes the Chaka Khan song called "Through the Fire," and he calls it "Through the Wire," and that's what got him on his way to being a rapper.
And that's repeated, you know, historically there are a million different examples of that.
Oh, without a doubt.
Elvis on the Louisiana Hayride. Everybody has their, you know, moment.
But you know what it comes down to, Bob? Every year the year passes, we need to have one more of those current stories so it stays relevant with us.
Sure, sure.
Otherwise we'll think, "Oh, but those were mythical times. We can't do that."
I get
the other
that,
thing I wanted to mention was, I think it's evil genius, and I like it. I was reading a blog. You're not going to get this at first, Bob. When I explain it, you will. This woman had a John McCain ad on her blog, and you're wondering, well, and she didn't put it up there. So she was like, "Why the hell is a John McCain ad on my blog?" So she started investigating, and Bob, this is how ingenious evil the Republicans are. What they did was, they paid AdSense. Now this is how stupid they also are. They paid AdSense to say, "Okay, we're going to buy keywords." So she had on her blog 2006 elections, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you put 2006 elections, you get the McCain ad. They bought up tons and tons of keywords, Bob. I mean, it's ridiculous.
They're advertising, in especially where the internet is concerned, none of the old paradigms, none of the old models work anymore, because it's thought of, at least by the advertising evil geniuses, in completely different terms from what you and I would think about.
Right.
I've seen, and frankly, there's nothing we can do about it, or others can do about it. I've been to liberal websites that have Ann Coulter ads on them.
But I'm going to explain to you why in a second.
Okay.
See, what they did was, in the political season, the fever that is high-pitched and at the cutthroat, what they did was, they said, "Hey, we'll put an ad on these liberal sites because that's how much balls we have, by taking all these words." And here's what they did. They are betting on that nobody clicks on the ads, because, see, listen, people, every time...
Now, wait. I thought the whole idea was impressions or views or...
Right, but here's the ingenious thing. When you have to pay every time that someone clicks those ads in a political season. Now, when it's...
Oh, I got it.
Okay, now...
You're advertising on the cheap because you're putting an ad up that you just want them to see. You don't
right.
give a damn what happens when they click on it or go somewhere. You
right.
just want it seen, and thereby you're getting by on the cheap because the website itself doesn't get jacked up impressions to bill you on.
Right, but we can flip it, people, and here's how we flip it. You take a McCain ad, you find the keyword, 2006 election, maybe that's it, maybe abortion, who knows? Maybe stupid veteran, I don't know. And then you put that, you get the McCain ad, and this is what you do. Every time you click it, it costs the campaign. Let me say that again. Every time you click the ad, it costs the campaign. And to add one on top of the insult to injury, Bob, you get money for it.
Oh, that's sweet.
So here's what you can do. And we could literally, now, the cost per click, here's where it gets even better, people. The cost per click is, and I don't know, I'm sure you get a lot of traffic on your head-on site. I would imagine you get a lot of hits. I don't know how many. I mean, if it's a blogger who can do this, I'm sure Head-On Radio Network can do this. But every time, is your traffic good? Have you checked that or anything like that?
That's not my department.
Okay, well, I'm guessing that it probably is pretty not heavy, but standard to where you could do this. So you take those ads, and the cost per click, see, here's the other thing. We're in political season, so the cost per click is anteed up a little bit. I don't know how much it is, but if you sign up for AdSense with Google, then you get paid.
Well, we are signed up with AdSense. I know that.
Okay, then this is what we do. We take the McCain ads and you have an arrow, say, click the bastard or something like that. Just make people click so you can get money. It's reverse guerrilla fundraising.
Oh, that's, I know John's listening right now and he's the webmaster.
I hope he is.
Do you just sit around, David, and this kind of evil stuff just bubbles to the top of your brain? I mean, how does this work?
No. I stumbled
does this,
on
does
that.
This, does this come while you're watching the latest episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force?
No, Bob. See, I was reading. I'll send everybody the link. I think we need to. I'll send you the link so you can read it and you can find out for yourself where I got it from. I was reading the Daily Gotham. It's a blog, and one of the posts with this woman, she just wanted to find out. See, this is why we have to become detectives when it comes to advertising. Because we find out the tricks and trades. And then pretty soon, we realize, how do we get that fundraising to go to us in seasons like this?
Oh, God knows. That's the $64 million question.
I know. And here's how. The cost per click. See, this is what people don't understand. In a time of political season, it's do or die for your candidate. They ante up the cost per click on the publisher. They put it on the liberal sites because they think it's free advertising. Nobody's going to click on it. When they buy up those keywords, it just pops out of nowhere. So that's why you see a lot of those ads.
But if they figure out that we've figured it out, won't they stop?
No, because they're stupid. they realize that...
Well, there's the short answer.
What?
There's the short answer.
I mean, they have to take the hit, Bob, because this is what they're doing. They're high token, high rolling gamblers, and I guess what I'm saying is if we really wanted to, we could raise $1,500 in a month, possibly $2,000, with just clicks. I mean, I don't know how to put it any other way. Just clicks.
Lord, wouldn't that be sweet?
Well, I think John needs to. I'll send John the link to that blog, and hopefully people are listening. And if you have a blog, then you know, look at AdSense. Try 2006 elections. You can probably do a search engine search and see which keywords that the Republicans bought. I mean, they didn't just buy two, Bob. They bought a ton. And this is a big business that people don't understand. When you buy a keyword, people. When you buy a keyword and you have a high traffic website and it's game time season for whatever they're advertising or promoting, that ad will pop up. And some people will just be annoyed by it and they'll know how to shut it off, or some people won't even care and they'll just be there and they don't understand why. But in a time like this, I say take advantage.
Look, the entire political money system is designed to take money from people who actually work for a living, and I mean this across the political spectrum, whether it's Republicans who are so dumb they can barely breathe without assistance, who work for a living and still write the checks to the RNC, or whether it's the Democrats who do it on a grassroots basis and fund campaigns that way. All of that money, all of that hard-earned money, David, goes into the pockets mostly of big media. Now, if we can figure out a way that we can dip our toe in that stream, so much the better for us.
In this political season, because the cost per clicks, it would be worth it to do. It would be worth it to get those ads up on your site or up on a highly trafficked blog or anywhere.
Yeah.
And just tell people click away. You don't even have to explain anything to them.
But how do you find what the relevant keywords are?
Like I said, 2006 elections. That's one. That's a relevant keyword. If you put 2006 elections. It explains it in the blog post a little bit more, and I also think someone posted a bunch of keywords up on a message board somewhere as well, too. But again, it is one of those high trickery type things.
So we met a tag our website with those keywords.
Right.
Okay.
The ad pops up, and then you have, voila, an instant guerrilla fundraising providing people just click.
It would be kind of fun to get John McCain to pay us to tell people that he is the McCain-Churian candidate, wouldn't it?
Yes, you could do that. You could do all kinds of campaigns with it. See, the thing is, people don't realize there is a way you can always get to the money. It's just a question of how and where and timing. And when you get the timing, and when you got the timing, which we do now, and you got the how, and you know where to get it, pretty much all falls into place. I don't know how. See, the beauty about this is I don't know how much you can raise with more than God knows how many people clicking. I don't know.
It's well worth the effort, seems like. Hey, David, I got to run along. I got somebody sitting here who's been holding for a little while.
All right, Bob.
All right, talk to you later. By the way, I was glad to see the boys coming back off of their salary dispute with Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Oh, and you know, I got to send you the other link to the Aqua Teen Hunger Force. There's a new episode too.
Oh, you know, those are 30 minutes out of my life that I just sit and giggle. And
oh, by the way, did you see the Giants and the Carl announcement that when the Giants won, it says Carl's still slightly pissed?
No.
That's one thing I
noticed, and boy, I tell you, we're deep into inside baseball now. I started noticing the lamp in Carl's living room.
Yeah.
He's got a Lawrence Taylor New York Giants helmet lamp. It's got a big 56 on it.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, talk to you later, David.
All right, later, Bob.
Bye. David and I are fans of Aqua Teen Hunger Force. You just gotta get it. Hi, who have I got?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up?
Oh, just another day sitting here watching the piranha eat each other. You know.
Yeah, it's all Siamese fighting fish, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. As I say, I turn on Nutball and put on the mute so I don't have to listen to you while I'm waiting for Oberman to come on. And just sit there and watch them and just go, just chew each other up. Go on, chew each other up.
It's wrestling.
Feel it without the sound. That's hard to do.
Well, it's fun. It's fun to watch. Fun to try to read Chris Matthews' lips through the spit. You know.
It's like saying you got to wonder if they have one of those things. You know how they used to have the.
Well, they've got their. They've got what it is their TV cameras pulled way back with a zoom lens so that they're out of range for when he sprays.
Because I tell you what, sometimes it's just, you just like, you know, you're just sitting there going, somebody got a distemper shot standing by just in case.
I was clicking past A&E the other day, and I saw Niedermeyer on Animal House saying, a pledge pin. And I thought, you know, Chris Matthews.
This too could be true. Yeah, but how did you enjoy the thing in Media Matters today with Mr. Brock, where he went down, you know, It doesn't look too bad until you link them all together, and he was going down the whole list of MSNBC. You know, starting with Amos, then Scarborough, Carlson, Matthews, then it's like with Schuster. You know, it's sort of like, guys, I'm sorry, one here and there, okay, you know, it's kind of stupid.
That's what you call a pattern in practice.
One right after the other. Oh, it's like, say, is there somebody running MSNBC who doesn't come down there every once in a while, the baseball bat, and this person says it, you get it.
But, it is true. Yeah, Jameson Foser?
Foser, I think. Yeah.
At the column Media Matters by Jameson Foser at MediaMatters.org. It is. It's a very, very solid connect-the-dots piece on what's going on at MSNBC.
But you know what's
funny out of all of this is the thing that happened a couple of weeks ago where somebody said, oh, well, Keith Olbermann runs MSNBC now.
Yeah.
Not quite.
It's got to the point now. I'm sorry, on MSNBC, I may have the picture on, but I've got the sound off, and I don't turn the sound on until Olbermann comes on, and I may see what Abrams is carrying. That's about the only two shows I watch anymore on MSNBC. You know, Abrams usually for the first 15, 20 minutes will do that before he gets into the entertainment crap, you know, and all that. You know, lately, usually his first hour, half hour, his hour show has been, you know, things on the Bush administration. You know, so, but I say, it's got to that point that MSNBC, it's like, you know, if you ever wants to try it, please go ahead. But like I say, if you listen to 5 minutes of Tucker Carlson, or you listen to less than 5 minutes of Matthews, you've had all the anti-Hillary stuff you need for the rest of the week.
Yeah, you're all immunized and stuff.
I mean, you know, it's when you sit there and he does it, you know, when Matthews does it for a full damn hour, and it's like just it goes one to the next guest, and it's the same thing. It's like, you know, don't you have meetings to somebody not stick their hand up and say, Chris, can we do another story, something different for a day? I guess that person gets fired on the spot.
It is kind of fun, however, to watch the Huckstery people. I don't know if you caught this or not, but the Huckstery people are all up in arms, lo and behold, at Fox, Luke.
Oh. Well, do you see the story where
they're not fair. They're biased in favor of McCain. Oh, really? Do you think? Congratulations and welcome to reality.
Well, you know, did you see the thing where they were talking about Huckstery and they said, like, over a 1 or 2 day period, how many different shows he was on? They just went down the list. I think it was like all the Sunday morning shows
and see, there's something telling in that. I'm glad you brought that up because it was telling. He was on Face the Press this week, or you know, they all run together for me.
Yeah.
Bob Schieffer on Sunday morning. Okay, yeah. And Bob Schieffer said, well, you know, do you want to be vice president? I'm running for president. I'm not running to be vice president. Yada, 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 yada. But on the other hand, when Schieffer pressed him and said, well, will you say right now that you would not accept the vice presidential nomination from John McCain? Suddenly all that I don't want to be vice president just dried right up. Well, let me put it to you this way. Bob, I wouldn't be in this race if I didn't want to be president. Well, is that a yes or a no? No. He got real, real serpentine and slippery when it came down to saying he wouldn't. Because, and then he shows up, I guess, on Meet the Prestitutes and defend, and there he had to defend his association with Kenneth Copeland. And, you know, oh boy, weren't they tough on him? Weren't they tough on Huckstery? Not. But for me, the seminal thing out of the Sunday morning Babblehead shows was Huckstery saying that, you know, and apparently this, I'm being told the same exchange did take place on Meet the Prestitutes.
It's hard to keep up with him. He's almost pacing himself on different channels.
Well, he is, but it's very important because while I'm sitting here looking at the right wing emails that bang into my box on a routine basis, Limbaugh, Lieberman, McCain ticket? Mm-mm. No. It's McCain Huckstery. Honest to God, it is. I mean, I'm not saying anybody's gonna that I got any money to bet or anything.
Oh.
But it may.
Which way the wind's blowing?
Doctor, yeah, can't put a Band-Aid on somebody without killing him. Dobson gave him the endorsement, which among the fundies is like getting a blessing from the Pope.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that in mind, and Dobson had come out a few days before and said, "I will not vote for John McCain." Well, Dobson really does have influence with the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing crowd. And the only way that McCain can neutralize either the women that Hillary... And boy, I hate falling into these broad generalizations. I just feel like crap when I do. But there's a certain amount of truth in them. The only way for McCain to neutralize the women that Hillary could bring out, or the African-Americans that Obama could bring out, especially in the Deep South, is to have a man of God.
You know, it's one of those things. The other thing that's got to me is, have you noticed how now nobody in the press will call Obama the front runner? Oh, he's won 7 races in a row, but we can't call him the front runner.
Possibly, though, Luke, that's because he might not be.
Well, I know.
If you go purly by how many states each one has won, clearly he's in the lead. But
But if you listen to him, you know, for the last 10 days, that's pretty much all they've been saying is he's got the momentum. He's the leader. He's going to fork, you know, Hillary's going to have to play catch-up. You know, and it's sort of like, well, yeah, as long as he can play, as long as he can run through caucuses, he can. You know, I mean, it's because the way caucuses are set up, caucuses are designed for people who have money. That's the problem I have with caucuses is compared to a primary. A primary, everybody can vote. Caucuses, well, you've got to take time to go down and spend a day. You know, and some people can't do it. I'm sorry. They have to work and things like that. But, you know, a caucus is set up for people who have the time and the money to go do it. Where primary, everybody gets their opportunity to vote.
And caucuses have a public element to them. So that, it, you know, there's more of a likelihood of some level of peer pressure taking place.
Yeah. So if 10 people show up for Obama and 5 people show up for Hillary, guess what? Those 10 people are going to be, you know, 10 against 5. And it's going to be, you know, like a jury system. You know, when you're sitting there, and 10 people are telling you the person's guilty, and you're one or two people saying, no, they're not. They're like, just wear you down. But, you know, it's just amazing. Did you read the Krugman column today?
Yes, I did.
And he's right. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, I didn't notice, and I really don't think Schuster meant it is the way some people are portraying it. But, you know, could you imagine if he, you know, Where were the things a few months ago, you know, when we had Mitt Romney's sons? You know, when the big thing came up about his kids not being in the military. You know, all 5 of his sons were been campaigning for him. I didn't hear anybody question, you know, go out and doing a whole lot of long interviews with him. You know, because that's the only time you heard about him was when that question came up, is why aren't they in Iraq? Or, you know, when you have things like that, and it's like, you know, I hate to, excuse me for saying this, and I don't mean it to sound racist, but how would it have been if somebody had said, you know, is Obama pimping out Oprah?
Sure, or, you know, is Obama, more appropriately, is Obama pimping out his daughter Michelle?
Well, but I mean, the thing is, though, about Oprah is they bring Oprah in, you know, to get the big...
Oh, well, yeah, okay, yeah, I get it, sure.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because she is the big draw.
The thing is, with the suspension of David Schuster, though, Luke, how best to say this? Everybody acted so shocked.
Yeah.
But my God, it's not David Schuster. It's Rush Limbaugh, okay? Yeah. David Schuster is only trying to do the same tired shtick that Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage and Hannity and O'Reilly and Beck... Glenn Beck called John Edwards' wife a whore.
I know.
And nobody, I mean, so, you know, if I was David Schuster, I'd be a little bit confused.
Well, the thing of it is, you know, the thing of it was, you know, when you go back and read the thing, he was trying to get into Bill Press. And Bill Press wouldn't bite. You know, that was like the third time he'd gone after something on that. And, you know, and twice before, Bill Press hadn't bit. And that's when he used that, it's sort of like the, you know, let's see what I can say something. What can I say that will finally tick you off? But,
And that's what I'm getting at. That's, you know, it's...
Who yells fire the loudest?
But, well, no, I mean, okay, I mentioned Beck. He called John Edwards' wife, who is suffering from terminal cancer, a prostitute.
Yeah.
All right. Rush Limbaugh has a history. He called Chelsea Clinton when Chelsea Clinton was 12 years old. Not a grown woman, but when she was 12 years old. He called her the White House dog. And nobody ever called him on the carpet for that, because if you call him on the carpet, my friends, I am merely an entertainer. I did that to get a laugh.
Well, that's one thing I saw in some of these stories that they brought up, and it was true. The one big problem that MSNBC has is they haven't decided what they are. Are they hard news? Or are they wanting to be, you know, entertainment? Which do they want to be? They can't make up their mind.
David Schuster was a reporter.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. Schuster's a reporter, and here you stick on Chris Matthews, who nobody can seem to decide. What is Chris Matthews now? Is he a host? Is he an opinion maker? What is he? You know, it's one of those things, you know.
You know, on the other hand, you've got, a big deal. I saw the press release, Luke. Big deal was made. You know, the CPAC convention was this past weekend. And a big deal was made, and I got the press release. You know, CPAC will not invite or pay Ann Coulter to come and speak at CPAC. Guess what? She did anyway. She talked to the young Republicans.
Oh, and bring that up.
And once again, here's a guy. I'm sorry. Well, maybe. Here's a guy who's. Here's Ann Coulter, who a year ago addresses CPAC, and uses a sexual slur on John Edwards.
Yep.
Did she fail to show up on Fox or any other network for even one appearance in exchange or in retaliation for that sleaze? No.
Well, I tell you another one that I've noticed that I haven't heard anybody complain about, and they should be. Have you noticed that a whole bunch of these McCain rallies in the background? You look there, and there stands Joe Scarborough.
Sure.
That's fine. Are you going to leave the morning show for a while?
Mika Brzezinski is on MSNBC every morning, and she never discloses that her daddy is associated with and paid by the Obama campaign.
Yeah.
Now, this is not being said by somebody who's an ardent Hillerite. I'm not. I'm also not an ardent Obamanian. I'm about this close to, like I told Ed earlier.
Yeah, just walk away.
I'm not going to have anything to do with the primaries. I'll go and do my duty as a Democrat in the fall. But I'll leave it to the squabbling children to sort it out. Because there's clearly no room for adults in this process. And what's more, you know, our good friend Kate has from time to time opined, and I've often wondered exactly what she meant by it, that there ain't going to be no election. And I didn't. Sometimes I wondered, you know, does she mean that George Bush won't leave office peacefully and legally, or you know, is it because of the electronic voting machines? But the more I look at these daggum superdelegates, as far as the primary is concerned, it seems screamingly abundantly obvious to me, Luke, that there ain't going to be no election.
But have you also seen the thing now where the thing they're pushing is, oh, by the way, we'll let the Michigan and Florida people come if they'll caucus. So what if you've already voted? We aren't going to use that. We're going to make you caucus to pick out who you're going to support.
It seems
those votes have already been cast.
You know, the old analogy used to be used with the Democrats of saying that, you know, in dealing with the Republicans, we were like Charlie Brown, you know, trying to kick the football that Lucy was holding. And every time she pulls it away, every time we wind up going, ah, and wind up flat on our backs. But at this point in time, with the superdelegates and all this infighting, it's gotten to the point where it's more like we're Charlie Brown, we're asking Lucy to hold the football, and we're asking her to pull it away, too. You see what I'm saying?
Well, you know, like I said, they've got these questions, and the thing about the superdelegates is they were sitting there going, okay, then what are Senators Kennedy and Kerry going to do? Okay, so now are you going to vote the way your state voted, which means you have to vote for Hillary?
Well, they don't have to do anything.
No, I know, but I'm saying, you know, but that's what happened. You know, that's one of the big complaints right now is the superdelegates have to obey what their state voted. That's what some of them are saying until they say, oh, by the way, this person, you know, he's in a state that voted for Hillary. And they go, well, he has to follow his heart. They go, okay, then so does somebody in Oklahoma have to can vote for Hillary instead of since Obama won Oklahoma? And they go, oh, no, he has to hold himself to what the people in the state voted.
Right.
You know, sort of like do as I say, not as I do.
Precisely.
Oh, I'm going to get off here because I know you got more people. But pass along to Peter that this past weekend I picked up the Torchwood DVDs.
Okay.
Enjoy them.
Good deal. I will.
All righty then.
All right. You take care, Luke.
Y'all have a good week.
Going to try. Bye. And rolling onward. Hi, who have I got?
I guess that would be me if you're asking who you've got. That's Kate.
Well, then we know the answer to that question, don't we? One less dilemma for the night. I'm all for that.
I've been waiting for several months to make a call like this, calling from Mount Belzoni. There's nobody in the trees, but...
You really aren't on Mount Belzoni, are you?
There is no mountain here. Fagan made that up. I don't know. Well, maybe there's a mountain in his mind, but it's just flat farmland and a little old town.
But you're in Belzoni.
I am in Belzoni, sitting in the parking lot of some church.
No kidding.
Next to Fred's and across from the Cash Plus, and the Sonic is across the street. And you know,
I'll have you know that after Thursday night's show, I got an email from our buddy Scott. Scott in Massachusetts. Let me see if I can find it here real quick.
Is he the lawyer guy?
He is. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Okay, got it.
But it said, he quoted it and said, oh, yeah, it's one of my favorite songs. Oh, there it is. There it is. Yeah, the subject line said, thanks for calling. So you say there's a race of men in the trees here for tough legislation. Thanks for calling. Always one of my favorite lines.
Well, I'm here to tell you all that there's no, I don't know. Well, I don't know. If the mount is in Fagan's mind, there might be a race of men in the trees. I don't know, but anyway, it's not. It's a central Mississippi town, and I just woke up this morning thinking, got to go to Mount Belzoni, and I'm about. Actually, what's more intriguing to me is I'm about 12 miles north of Midnight, so that was one. That's right in the atlas, and I said, "Oh, I got to go there."
Well, one of these days, you just have to swing through. West Virginia, so you can go to fun places like Left Hand and Looneyville or Fraser's Bottom.
Well, don't threaten me. I may just do that. But right now, I want to keep this brief because I reckon you're probably talking about the non-elections and just babbling on and blathering.
Yeah, that's what I do. I babble, Kate. Thanks a million. Way to validate.
Well, yeah, it's not you. It's the way I feel about the subject at hand. And
well, no, the lights finally went on for me. I get it now. Ain't going to be no election. Well, at least ain't going to be no primary election because the superdelegates are going to, going to decide it for us, you know, ignorant rank-and-file Democrats because we don't have the common sense to pick a candidate. You know, especially not the likes of me, you know, who was out there thinking that, you know, Dennis Kucinich was actually the guy.
Yeah,
I need a superdelegate to do my voting for me.
Oh, me too. I'm just
in West Virginia. I get Nick Casey and Marie Prezioso to do my voting for me.
Ooh, well, get on those two.
Nick's the chairman of the state Democratic Party, and I guess he leads the superdelegate delegation.
I guess he didn't have anything to do with Huckabee winning the primary.
No. Wrong party, at least ostensibly.
You say. I don't know. Somebody's pulling the strings on this one, and that's all I have to say about that. So, anyway, actually what's happening with me is that there is no race of men in the trees here, but I'm on my way down to WQRZ in Waveland, Mississippi, where we, in fact, we still have TVs and tires in the trees. And so what trees are left standing, they're full of debris. So I'm heading out.
Well, you can then there's every chance in the world, as you see that stuff, Kate, you can live another line from the song. As long as you have plenty of Java and Chesterfield Kings. Because you're going to feel like crying.
I roll my own and I cry all the time. Yes, yes, yes. I've been on the phone to Bryce, who runs the radio station there, and I don't have any idea what I'm going down there for, but and I have no idea why all these radios are in my life. But, you know, I just keep on moving down the road. Just stay on the road. That's what I do. So anyway, I just thought you needed a call from Mount Belzoni tonight. I don't know what's going on with you. How's your back or your neck or whatever was wrong?
I'm here. After several days of persistent abuse of ibuprofen, I can stand to do it. But it's down into my throwing shoulder, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to show up for pitchers and catchers report in spring training or not.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that. Can you hold sheetrock up?
No, but my son-in-law can.
He lifts it and you hold it with your head.
No, he lifts it and right. He does the lifting, I do the holding.
Right. So you can use your other arm.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can't bail on Alex now because
And we're very close to, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we're very close to getting started. I've found the sheetrock that we need. I've found the insulation. I've got all the prices. Going to get started on the wiring.
Okay.
And this is just exciting beyond belief.
Yeah.
We stand around in the empty building going, this is going to be so cool.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm excited about that. And I heard Jim Yancey was on the air Sunday morning, and his really choppy reception, so he didn't get to finish his whole pitch, but... the price of sheetrock has gone up, or plywood has gone up down there in Jackson County. I don't know to what, because that broke up. And he's had to let go one of his staff people and put two others on, I think he called it hard time, you know, and so he's down to, like, skeletal staff.
Well, we had to move heaven and earth just to find, because I'm relying on Wayne for construction expertise on this, and he was absolutely adamant about the fact that we had to use 5/8 inch sheetrock. And couldn't find it. And finally did. Uh-huh. So, you know, that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. All right. Well, I know. It's rough all over. I hope you get the studio slammed together before the prices go out and go off of the scale and the truckers quit bringing in the goods and stuff. So I don't know. It's pretty creepy out here on this highway, and so I'm gonna head on down and look for a place to park and spend the night.
I'm going to take another call, and then I'll take a little break because we just got to run the night flight out now. I haven't run it in a while, and everybody deserves to actually hear the whole lyric its proper place.
Yeah, right. Well, I'll just sit here. My stream is way too slow to listen, so I'll just know that you're. I actually been singing it all the way down here from Green. I don't know where I've been, Greenwood or something. I don't know, Highway 82. So anyway, I'll be with you guys in spirit. So I'll just keep on staying on the road, and I'll call you from WQRZ later.
All right, see ya.
Bye.
I was trying to try to figure out a way to do a jingle, but Waveland.
Bryce and I'll make some. We didn't spend 25 minutes on the phone. We were just bazoo. I mean, he and I are going to be some kind of team, I'm telling you. So anyway, let's hear some Don Fagan, and I'll be with you in spirit.
Sounds good, Kate. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Yeah, I'll play that in a minute. Let's see if somebody is still here. Yes, they are. Hi, who have I got?
Hello.
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 Hello, Michelle.
Hello, can you hear me?
I'm here. Are you there?
Oh, God, barely. I was freaking out. I'm like, God, the cat's stepping on the keyboard and typing in the room, and the phone won't get off speakerphone. Multitasking.
Well, I've got all the right buttons pushed on this end. Anything else is your fault.
Well, David, it's all David's fault. I was doing my duties that I'm supposed to get done. I was doing my work, and I'm listening to you guys. God, I wish I could go in the chat room, but I got to get this done. And then David calls and starts talking about the ads, and then you guys are talking about all the before after that. Was it or before that? Was it Bruce that called?
Luke.
Luke, yeah. I mean, you're talking politics and just the malarkey, and then, of course, you mentioned the delegates. Those special, you know.
That's right.
We've got pretty shiny epaulets on our shoulder, delegates.
The special delegates, the super delegates, the ones with the capes.
Yes, they shine. They shine when they walk in the room, so you'll want to slide their way.
And I didn't know until I was listening to Guy James Michelle that this is all a creation of the McGovern era, the 1972 Democratic Party, that's when the superdelegates came in. And I'm sure that there's somebody out there who thinks superdelegates are the neatest thing since sliced bread who could explain to me why I'm such an addle-pated booby for not liking superdelegates, but they strike me as being profoundly undemocratic.
Well,
I would expect this superdelegates are something I would expect of the Republican Party, but oddly enough, we're the ones who have them, not them.
Well, and you know, I was giving all the blame to Luke and David, but then I got to blame you because my total purpose for calling in is, of course, you know, like you said. You're kind of like a little bit burnt. You're kind of like a little bit strung out on this. It's just like one more thing that just says, what the hell am I doing being, you know, politically active, trying to motivate people to, you know, look at these candidates and, you know, God forbid, you're right, God forbid you even think about Dennis Kucinich being a
or candidate. John Edwards.
Or, yeah.
Or at this point, to be fair, Joe Biden, Bill Richardson, or Chris Dodd. They all got run. They got run because the professional, so-called professional media were absolutely hell-bent on having this head-to-head catfight between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. I resent the hell out of it.
Well, and this is my major issue, and that is the finance. That are caught up in this whole bullshit that's called our political process. For the you know, what has it been? Already a year and a half? Mind you, it didn't stop from 2006, you know? I mean.
Right. And perhaps that's the central point of all this, Michelle. It never really ends. We started talking about 2000. I mean, and I can say this for a fact because I was on the air the day after the election in 2004. And we started talking about this that day.
Yeah.
And going, you know, from that time to this, we haven't gone a week without talking about presidential election politics.
Well, and you know what? The thing is that I think that there's a point to that. You know, I mean, how many people are still watching Survivor? There's a few, but they're kind of dwindling out. You know, they're starting to go, this is starting to bore me. So now they're on to Heroes, you know, some movie or show. I don't know what it is. I mean, my daughter talks to me about it, and people that watch TV talk to me about it. So, you know, I don't have to hear about, you know, the what's the one with the stars? What is that?
Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah, that one. And then there's where they call in. Oh, shoot. I'm terrible with these. And it's like the singers, and they got the three judges.
Oh, that's American Idol.
American Idol. I mean, American Idol is even kind of, you know. I mean, last night, I happened to look over at the TV. My husband was watching the awards, you know. And they've got some kind of contest going on down at Staples Center for who's going to play with the Foo Fighters, which I love the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
And Pretender, that's... I don't know if you've seen that video.
No, I haven't. Is it a good one?
Got to send it. You know, I got to figure out how to send this music to you, too. Share it with my family. Anyway, that's not wrong. anyway.
The RIAA has not figured, is not listening yet, so.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, they've got all this going on, and people just get bored with it. Don't you think people are kind of, I know I'm burnt out. I burnt out.
That, you know, Michelle, that's why I opened the story with what I thought was, or opened the show with what I thought was a much more compelling story. This business about the tainted beef and where it's going in our food system and what it is, and I don't know if it resonates with people. I don't know if I don't know if we've even, you know, this audience, I don't know if we've been sucked into the political process so much that the only thing we can talk about, you know, and we're vibrating. I don't know. All I can do is use my judgment.
Yeah, no, and sorry to say, I didn't get clicked on in the first part of the show, so that's what you
said. All right, we're revoking your membership. I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
You know what?
That's a joke. That's a joke.
I'll call Agnes.
No, don't threaten me with Agnes, okay? Please. She's mean.
I'm trying to muse you with it. Anyway, you know, of course I would rather hear more conversations about, you know, and more people's knowledge about the food and the water. Our water, like, we had, I'll tell you guys, they blew out our street, the end of our street is that I live on a circle. And every once in a while they blow it out, you know, they only let it run for like 15 minutes. And then half an hour later, the water in the toilet, the porcelain gods, was brown.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's coming out and, you know, coming out the pipes. And so it stayed that way for 3 days. 3 days. I called them. Oh, don't worry, ma'am. It's just the minerals that were stirred up. Well, okay.
I think if I lived where you live, and of course you're in Southern California, Michelle, if I lived where you lived, I would have to watch Chinatown once a week.
What's China? You mean Chinatown, literal Chinatown?
The movie, the classic movie, Chinatown,
yeah.
With Jack Nicholson,
yeah.
And Faye Dunaway and John Huston. The one that the movie that generated this great line, which is one of my favorites of all time.
Politicians, ugly buildings, and whores all get respectable if they last long enough.
Ain't it the truth?
Yeah.
But it's all the I don't want to give it. If you've never seen it, I'm not going to give it away. But it centers on water in Southern California.
You know, I probably have, but I'll look it up and.
Jack Nicholson as Jake Giddies is probably the coolest hard boiled detective since Humphrey Bogart.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's
know,
one of my favorites.
I like the one with the lawyer. You know, she wasn't even a lawyer. She was just an assistant to the lawyer. Gosh.
Oh, I know. I know what
you're
talking about.
And she did the investigation on that pollution, you know,
yeah.
That's happening. I think that was with the jet fuel or something on those lines.
No, but I just can't think of the film right. I can't even think. Julia Roberts.
Yeah, she did played the.
Yeah, played the protagonist. Yeah.
But, you know, it for me, and so when David called in and was talking about, yeah, let's mess with them, hey, you know, that's where I could put my energy. I mean, I'm like, oh, I like that. Screw them, because they're trying to screw me with all this bull crap, like I have a choice in my democratic process. I mean.
Well, so did you go out to the primaries Tuesday?
Yeah, I went all the way down to my registrar's office. We have mail-in ballots. We have, you know, we do the mail-in ballots.
Mm-hmm.
Every year I take them in personally. I don't mail them because I wanted the piece of paper to vote on. I don't like voting on the machines. And I don't trust the postal part of it, so I take them in. And I tell them, because I'm taking in my husband and my stepdaughters, who, by the way, still got another Republican ballot. So her name's Melody, and she gets a Melanie, you know, ballot also, but it's on the Republican side. So if she's feeling kind of iffy, she can take the Melanie ballot. Anyway, yeah, that's that whole thing where I talked to you. You remember that, right, Bob?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, yeah, I did that, and I felt, in fact, I sent ELO, I think, got the pic. I sent a photo, and ELO got it, of what I look like after I voted. I voted, and I still don't feel right.
Still washing your hands, are you?
Yes.
In the brown water?
It's like the movie, The Crying Game. In the shower. Oh, God, that's not right.
Oh, and by the way, the movie is Erin Brockovich.
Ah.
I was informed by the chat room. They're my, they're like my external hard drive.
They're good.
Yeah.
They're
oh, good. You can't get anything past them.
No. I knew that. I was betting at least 100 thou that it was them. Anyway, you said you needed to take a break.
Well, I'm gonna play this little song so that everybody can hear it all. I've done it before.
I liked the other one, by the way.
Oh, I'm glad. Yeah, that was the XYZ. No, that was XTC. XTC. Yeah.
XTC. Yeah. I like that. I hadn't heard that one before.
Oh, that's ancient. That's their biggest song, and not the great band. Terribly, terribly literate band.
Beginning in the 80s?
Yeah, they're from the 80s.
Yeah.
XTC, and the name of the song is Senses Working Overtime.
Man, that's an oldie.
So am I.
Hey, you got to check out my video over there at Current, if you haven't already.
Okay, I will.
It's on taxes. I sent you thing. It's all Michelita. Everything now is Michelita. So.
Okay.
Everybody can call me Michelita.
That's very pretty.
Yeah. Well, it was my stepfather, that Italian stepfather that came in my life at 14 and treated me like a daughter. My mom's third husband worked out. Anyways, he used to call me Michelita because Michelle was Michael in Italian. So.
True. True. And French.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know, and the one time I saw a stripper in Florida, a male stripper, and they strip all the way, by the way.
I don't want to know that.
Okay, well, I... and his name was Michelle. I had to leave.
Well, you know, it sort of brings everything into focus. where the Beatles sing Michelle.
Yeah, there you go.
In French, no less. Yeah, sing it in French, though.
What
song
are you ringing?
Yeah, they're singing about a French guy.
Yeah.
Sans les mots qui vont très bien ensemble. Très bien ensemble.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear God. Okay. We better end this phone call.
I think so.
I think we're off in the weeds now, Michelle.
Too far.
Yeah.
I love you guys.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Talk to you later. Bye. The gal from Cal, Michelle. All right, yeah. Quick break as we go toward the last half hour of the program. An update. I'm happy to announce that February fundraising, February contributions, went to about $700. So, you know, we're not quite halfway there for the regular monthly. That was in large part due to a very large contribution by a person whose name I won't name unless they tell me that I can. We're so very grateful. Thank you very, very much. Took us toward, being able to meet February's bills and keep this going. And that's why I constantly say that this is, in fact, listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.
Seven seconds away we use. a coin, wait or nine, falls like diamonds.
Now I lay me down to sleep.
I pray thee, Lord, my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake.
Across Appalachia, children pray at night. Coal companies are destroying Appalachia with 3 million pounds of high explosives per day. Take a stand. Go to CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Be part of the solution so you and they can sleep at night. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net.
The trains are rolling by and I can feel the ground rumbling.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Yeah, my name is
Tune in to Foxed Up this Thursday, midnight Eastern, where we'll take a look at singer Sheryl Crow. Find out about her experience working for Michael Jackson.
Michael is, he's not like every other performer. And I think everyone has to sign a contract when they work with him, not to write a book, you know, about what goes on behind the scenes or whatever.
She'll also talk about her problems with Walmart. So be there this Thursday, midnight Eastern on Foxed Up, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
All I want to do is have a little fun.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
The Appalachian Mountains are being blown up so we can keep the lights on. Over half of U.S. electricity comes from coal, and mountaintop removal coal mining has destroyed over 470 of our mountains so far and buried over 1,000 miles of streams. If we don't stop the coal companies, there won't be anything left, because coal is the biggest contributor to global warming. But we are fighting back, and this March we will converge for Mountain Justice spring breaks in two heavily coal-affected states. For more info, you can visit mjsb.org, mjsb.org.
Alrighty then. So we're back. And, you know, just to... Sorry, I love the beginning of this. Wait for this. This is so cool. Used to listen to this with the... back in my salad days. With the top out on the car. Going about 100 miles an hour through a killer sound system. Long time ago. But it was a lot of fun, man. This is Tommy Emmanuel, by the way. John Fox can probably tell you more about Tommy than I ever could. But no, it was funny. Grabbed an email during the break there from our buddy Scott. Subject line, I wish I had a heart like ice. Stop throwing in the gratuitous Fagan references. You're killing me out here. Do it. Play it. Hope it's all better now, Scott. I don't know. I guess that's a secondary theme song now. I think it's official now. And if you haven't listened to The Nightfly, Donald Fagan's first solo effort away from Steely Dan, I hold to the theory that it's the most tightly produced album of the late 70s, early 80s. Just stunning. Just amazing. And, of course, I'm a sucker for great lyrics. And whether it's songs that he chose to cover or songs that he wrote, the thing is just genius. And it's one of those that I can... let's see. Ricky Lee Jones' Pirates, The Nightfly... those are a couple that I can listen to over and over and over and over. Email from William. Bob, every single talk show, except perhaps one, talks about nothing but these primary horse races. There's still all sorts of issues that have not gotten any better, and there is a year left of Bush to screw things up even more. The primaries overshadow everything while the beast sits waiting to pounce. I really honestly don't get the Obama craze. It's a bit extreme for me, at least. I look at Clear Channel and the freaks that own it and run it, and then hear many liberal progressive hosts who said all along all the Democratic candidates would make a good president, yet once Obama took off, they can't stop talking about him, especially Stephanie Miller. I have to wonder how much influence Clear Channel has over Mother Jones and Air America Radio. That's William in Hollywood. And all of those are rock-solid points. But I, for my part, I'm gonna be true to this. I mean, it's impossible to not talk about it some, but maybe my take on it is colored a little bit by virtue of the fact that neither of these two were my pick. Now, maybe that means I'm politically naive or politically immature or too much of a political purist, but they just weren't. I'm scared to death, and, you know, oh, God, solid wood. I need solid wood, not some damn piece of press board tonight. Here we go. Knock wood. I want to be around for a long, long time, but I'm afraid that no matter how, if I live to be 150, I'm never going to see America get serious about being America. Does that make any sense? William's right. We've got crushing problems. Hell, we've got crushing debt. Not doing anything about that. Oh, wait. We've got a stimulus package. Everybody going to get $300. Oops, look, daggummit, it turns out it's a loan against your next year's tax return. Doggone it, don't you love how that works? Of course, the part that we're giving to business, that's not a loan. And to be honest, that was not unilateral. That was a product of compromise between the allegedly Democratic Congress and the White House. Which does not instill in me a whole lot of good feelings. And look, let's be honest about this. If nowhere else but here, for heaven's sakes, let's be honest about this. A McCain presidency is not good for, on its surface, is not good for the right wingers who dominate the airwaves. Because they will eventually piss off their entire listenership if they sit there and they bang away hammer and tongs at John McCain, if he's president, for 4 or 8 years or however long he lasts. It's not good for him. It is also not good, and please, I'm not putting everybody under this banner. I think it's far more a phenomenon inside right-wing talk radio than anything approaching liberal talk radio. Because the liberal talkers that I know of are talented and can do other stuff. If Senator Clinton or Senator Obama gets into the White House, I have no doubt whatsoever that Randy Rhodes, Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, and God knows the king of them all, as far as I'm concerned, Mike Malloy, will be able to have something to talk about every night. Because electing a president does not mean that everybody gets ice cream and it's all balloons and you send in the clowns or whatever. liberal and progressive talkers will continue talking liberal and progressive issues. But the right wing can't stand another 4 to 8 years of water carrying because their numbers have the Rushes and Hannitys and the whole crowds, their numbers flatlined a long time ago. Their demographic is old and getting older. And they're having real issues. So consequently, it's not. I will tell you that all this business about Ann Coulter saying that she will vote for Hillary Clinton before she'd vote for McCain, the business about Rush Limbaugh swearing that McCain is poison, baby, that's wrestling. Right wing haters are always better off when they are opposing as opposed to when they are supporting. Good God, during the entire Clinton administration, if you were listening to your radio, you heard Rush Limbaugh every day. America under siege. That's how his show opened. And then when he got the Republican Congress that he so desperately wanted, America the way it ought to be. But the ditto monkeys out there don't have enough sense to realize, as I've said before, that they are being delivered as product to advertisers, regardless of who the right-wing talker is. Buy gold now. Well, they're not trying to get Rush Limbaugh to buy gold. They're trying to get his ignorant audience to buy gold at rates that are so high that only a fool would. But you get all that. No, I said something and it reminded me of something. And I'm trying to find it real quick. Don't know if it's going to show up, but when I said a discussion about what it means to be America... I know, some of you despise poetry. I don't. Langston Hughes, let America be America again. Let it be the dream it used to be. Let it be the pioneer on the plain seeking a home where he himself is free. America never was America to me. Let America be the dream the dreamers dreamed. Let it be that great, strong land of love where never kings connive nor tyrants scheme that any man be crushed by one above. It never was America to me. Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. There's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free. Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark? And who are you that draws your veil across the stars? I am the poor white, fooled and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery scars. I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog eat dog, of mighty crush the weak. I am the young man full of strength and hope, tangled in that ancient endless chain of profit, power, gain, of grab the land, of grab the gold, of grab the ways of satisfying need, of work the man, of take the pay, of owing everything for one's own greed. I am the farmer, bondsman to the soil. I am the worker sold to the machine. I am the Negro servant to you all. I am the people, humble, hungry, mean, hungry yet today, despite the dream, beaten yet today, O pioneers. I am the man who never got ahead, the poorest worker bartered through the years. Yet I'm the one who dreamt our basic dream. In the old world, while still a serf of kings, who dreamt a dream so strong, so brave, so true, that even yet its mighty daring sings in every brick and stone, in every furrow turned, that's made America the land it has become. Oh, I'm the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home, for I'm the one who left dark Ireland's shore and Poland's plain and England's grassy lea, and torn from black Africa's strand I came to build a homeland of the free. The free? Who said the free? Not me. Surely not me. The millions on relief today, the millions shot down when we strike, the millions who have nothing for our pay, for all the dreams we've dreamed and all the songs we've sung and all the hopes we've held and all the flags we've hung, the millions who have nothing for our pay except the dream that's almost dead today. Oh, let America be America again. The land that never has been yet, and yet must be. The land where every man is free. The land that's mine, the poor man's, Indians, Negroes, me, who made America, whose sweat and blood, whose faith and pain, whose hand at the foundry, whose plow in the rain must bring back our mighty dream again. Sure. Call me any ugly name you choose. The steel of freedom does not stain. From those who live like leeches on the people's lives, we must take back our land again, America. Oh, yes, I say it plain. America never was America to me. And yet I swear this oath, America will be. Out of the rack and ruin of our gangster death, the rape and rot of graft and stealth and lies, we the people must redeem the land, the mines, the plants, the rivers, the mountains, and the endless plain, all the stretch of these great green states, and make America again. Wow. Isn't that what we're talking about? Isn't that exactly what we're talking about? Isn't every single issue that matters to people who call themselves liberal and Democrat embodied in that poem? Mercy sakes, I can't tell you off. That's Langston Hughes. How old is that poem? And it still rings true. And the beauty of it is that while it has frequently been used in reference to civil rights struggles, he lets it be known early on. I'm the poor white fooled and pushed apart. I'm the Negro bearing slavery scars. I'm the red man driven from the land. I'm the immigrant clutching the hope I seek and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog eat dog, of mighty crush the weak. Tune in Lou Dobbs any night of the week and see if you can't hear him bashing people for being poor and brown and from somewhere else. And playing at this puppet show of his concerns for the middle class. Bug spray, I say. And I guess that's what's under my skin about the political process, is the fact that we are not talking about what matters. We're saying things like, I have experience, and I'm going to bring change, and yes, we can, and no, we can't, and how dare you, and you called her what? Anything, anything, anything to keep from talking about what really matters. The war matters. Our children matter. The food they eat in school matters. Being able to go to the doctor when you're sick matters. Being something more than one paycheck away from abject, absolute disaster matters. And we're not talking about it. Well, we're talking about it. It's just that America isn't talking about it. You know what I mean? So thanks, everybody. It's awfully good to be back on this Monday evening. Coming up, a rerun of Strictly Confidential, followed by a brand new, fresh and shiny horn section, and a brand new, fresh and shiny with the newly restored to the Internet John Fox, all Foxed Up, coming your way at midnight Eastern Time. Thanks to the hardest working man in liberal talk, Ben Birch. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Thanks to all the hard working people at Coal River Mountain Watch who encourage you to go to crmw.net and become a part of the solution. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Kids, it's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to book, chapter, and verse 111 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head-On Radio Network. We're also supported by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Thank you. Thank you indeed for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Friday, February the 1st, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. on a Friday evening, that is February the 1st, 2008, you are indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and chat with us. Tonight is a Just Us show with a special beginning theme. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head on. That's 877-4 H-E-A-D-O-N. If you have unlimited long distance, please use that and save the studio a nickel or a buck. That is area code 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the mail during the breaks. And Bob is probably rolling his eyes saying, yeah, when he takes breaks. So you're welcome to participate via email or via the chat room, which is active as we speak, or by calling in the toll-free or the toll lines. We would love to have you. You will find the show site at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you'll find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from previous shows. You'll find links to the guests' websites. You'll find links there to the chat room, links to the Head On Radio Network main site. There you can find out about all the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, and you can find out about the times and the schedules. I'm only a very small part of the network. Links are there also to Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. Well, I should probably give you a progress report on The Voice. It is some better. I don't do the 14-year-old going through puberty bit as badly as I did Wednesday evening. Occasionally, though, it will shift from low to high gear without any intelligent control on my part. But it's getting better. I think that by the time Monday rolls around, we'll all be in good shape. You know, Bob will be traveling Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday, so it will be myself and John Fox carrying the live programs, and wow, that's cool. I don't know how I'm going to act not following Bob and Kate. He always gets everything psyched up for Strictly Confidential, and thank you, Bob. The story I'm going to open with, in fact, it's mentioned at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. This show, this topic was given to me by a man that I will only refer to as artist number one. There are actually three artists involved in this: artist number one, artist number two, and the third doesn't have to be artist number three, because actually I have permission.